I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Join us every Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or GMT-4, for a live interactive discussion at blab.im/Lisa DeLay. At that point, we will interact, ask questions, and dig deeper into the podcast episode released that day. Today, my guest is Esther Emery. Esther is a writer, a mom of three, and a wife. But not only that, she's a homesteader in Idaho, where they have been building their life from the ground up, trying to live sustainably off the land and build their dream home. Even though she's off the grid with electricity and running water and an indoor bathroom, she's still able to have a digital life online and reach other people with her blog and on social media. I'm very happy to welcome Esther. So I am very curious as to what you're doing out in the wilderness, and for people who don't know your story and what you're up to, sort of how you got started in it, and what is life like now?
Well, basically, I'm a bleeding heart. My key transition moment was actually in Nicaragua when I went to a sweatshop. It was making children's clothing for Target. Mm. And after that experience of seeing where my wealth comes from and what channels it passes through before it lands in my hands, I felt I just had to do something. You know, action had to be taken. Some steps had to be taken to change the way that I was living and the way that I was taking for granted these systems, which I consider to be destructive to the environment and to other human beings and to animals. So I didn't know what that was going to look like, but I have this husband who has always wanted to build his own home, build his own timber frame cabin, and on the way to that, a yurt. So it's kind of a combination between our two areas of expertise and fascination. I definitely provided the impulse to have dramatic lifestyle change in response to my concerns about global economy and consumerism. And then my husband really provided the how in terms of his passion for off-grid living and independence and self-sufficiency.
That's great. And for people who don't even know what a yurt is, how do you describe it?
So if a house and a tent got together and had a kid, their kid would be a yurt. It's a round home. It's a wall tent. So the walls are actually lattice work that can be collapsed. The original design comes from Asia, from Mongolian herders who needed to have a home that could be transported, but also would be very warm. And it's just a beautiful old technology that has been adapted for alternative lifestyles in the United States since the 1960s.
And even though you're off the grid in many ways, we're still having this conversation over the interwebs on Skype and everything. And so how does that work out for you?
Right. So we haven't had internet in our yurt for very long. The first almost 2 years that we lived out here, I maintained an internet presence by driving to my neighbor's house and sitting in her driveway to use her internet. So that was, you could say, not particularly sustainable method. But just this year, we have managed to get our own Wi-Fi on the property, which is through a line of sight antenna system to a neighbor. And we use our solar power to power it, our solar panels.
Oh, okay. And so you usually use solar power for a lot of your things. Do you use other things like generators and things like that?
Yeah. So we also have a gas generator, which runs our power tools. We don't have enough solar power to run power tools. And occasionally a pump to move water. But the solar power does lighting and internet, and for better or for worse, it powers our electronics.
Yeah, that's really remarkable, because I think a lot of people think once you're – that it's almost like camping, because when we go camping, we have a little pop-up, and it's rustic compared to some of the RVs and stuff. But but we really go to a place where we actually can't get online at all until we go to, like, the camp store. And it really feels like you're off the grid in a big way. But it's, you know, what you're doing isn't really like, you know, it's not quite camping, but it's also, you really have to think of a lot of other ways to solve problems of power and other things, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a big difference between vacationing mm-hmm. and lifestyle change. Mm-hmm. And we have occasionally found ourselves trying to do both. Mm-hmm. One of the impulses and one thing that makes it worth it to make a big change like this is the feeling of escape. And I joke about being a Peter Pan, that I never really wanted to grow up. So some things about my lifestyle are very childlike in that way. But the part where I actually engage in lifestyle change that allows me to live out my values, I have to find some maturity. And I have to say, these are the things that I need to be a grown up in 2015. And internet is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's also, you know, as you're providing for your kids and things like that too, I mean, it's sort of one of those things where it's going to be a really neat experience for them to have grown up in such a unique way. But at the same time, you don't want them to be like, it was so such a depressive environment, you know, we didn't have anything.
Oh, absolutely. And I have very clear perspective on that because my mother was also someone into alternative lifestyle. She was actually a public figure in the Back to the Land movement of the 1970s. So I have experienced this from the child's perspective and now from the parents. Mm.
And so is she living in that kind of lifestyle now?
She passed away in 2005. Mm. And it's a funny thing that I didn't try to be like her really in any way until after she had passed away. Yeah. An irony of life. Mm-hmm. But now I'm very much following in her footsteps.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I guess I'm wondering now, do you bring in an income through your through other businesses or other things that you do, or how do you sustain income for some of the extra things that you need to get that you can't create yourself?
Right. So Nick and I both have incomes. Mine is through writing, and it's very moderate, but it does exist. Mm-hmm. And my husband's income is as a freelance builder and construction worker. We each have control over how much we work. Unfortunately, my husband's work usually takes him not only away during the day, but away for days or weeks at a time. Mm. So we are constantly managing necessity, we're managing our definition of necessity in order to keep him here on the property as much as possible.
Mm. Mm. Very good. And then this happened, you've been doing this for about 2 years, did you say?
Yeah, so we left Boston actually almost exactly 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. We took about 6 months to find our property and to build our yurt on the property, and we've lived here for 2.5 years.
Mm, very good. And so for anybody who's interested in maybe this is like a lifestyle they would like to do, what do you know now that you wish you had known then?
Mm, that's such a good question. I think I've learned a lot about patience. Mm. One of the things that we imagined that we wanted to step away from is a culture of immediacy and self-gratification. But theoretically, stepping away from that theoretically is...
Mom, the brown truck came here and they got you a message.
Okay.
Whatever it is.
Okay, thanks, baby.
Box.
Okay. You all right?
Are you Esther Emery?
I am, but I'm talking. I need to go back to my call. Thank you. Can you go back outside?
Yeah.
Thanks. That was the UPS truck, sorry. They needed to tell me that the UPS truck came, which is actually kind of a valid thing.
Mm, yeah.
Okay, take Sadie back outside, Stella.
So you're not like in an inaccessible place or there wouldn't be a UPS truck nearby, right?
Hey!
Yeah, we didn't have UPS our first year because we hadn't worked on the road.
Mm.
But now we have UPS. Mm. And we actually don't have them in the wintertime either. Mm. Because they don't drive our road in the wintertime. We are responsible for clearing our own road. It's not a county road.
Mm. Right.
So we have UPS in the summertime.
Right. Oh, so then what do you do if you have a package? You have to just go to the headquarters and pick it up kind of thing?
Yeah, there's a whole system, actually. they have a place where they can leave it mm-hmm. at basically a neighbor's house. Mm-hmm. You know, we call everybody neighbors, even if they're a couple miles away, because we all live in the same mm-hmm. kind of environment. So they could be, the package can be left at a neighbor's house and we get a phone call telling us to go and pick it up.
Mm-hmm. And so you were talking about the immediacy that you were kind of trying to get away from.
It was really good, wasn't it? Right. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we thought we wanted to move away from was the culture of immediacy and self-gratification. But it turns out to be harder to change yourself than you might think. Mm. We found ourselves extremely impatient when our homestead didn't evolve as quickly as we had hoped, mm-hmm. when projects went wrong, when, for example, my bees died the first winter, and so did my ducks were taken by predators the first winter. And I was heartbroken. I wasn't at all prepared for how long it takes to develop a sustainable homestead. It's not anything like purchasing a home on the market.
Mm, absolutely. Everything's from the ground up. And that's so unusual that you have to get, I guess, completely retrained in how things work. I was digging more into your story and reading some of your posts and things like that, of course, the first thing I'm thinking of is Laura Ingalls and Pa going out and building their little prairie home and then using wooden nails and totally building everything from scratch, and they have to figure out how to do it or travel 2 days one way and 2 days the other way to get the things they need, and that's so separated from how we live now, where you can go to a superstore or something and pretty much get anything you want.
Yeah. At least I've got to let my dog in, or she's
sure.
going to keep barking.
Yeah, that's fine.
Just a second.
Sure.
Okay, I think we're peaceful for the moment. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. My dog snores, and so I have actual snoring recorded on a lot of in the background.
Hilarious.
You hear it dogs are like that, you know.
So you were talking about the Laura Ingalls Wilder image, and my response to that is that emotional experience of feeling that you have to solve a problem yourself is true for us at that kind of psychological level. Mm-hmm. We're not 2 days away from nails at all. I mean, especially now that we can just – I can literally order something on Amazon and have it show up here via a truck. But when you have intentionally engaged self-sufficiency, or when you're intentionally building a lifestyle that fits your own values – you begin to realize that most everything you need is within 100 feet of you, and that you can solve problems with your own ingenuity and the wealth of the natural world, rather than assuming that the best solution to any given problem comes from a store.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if someone were going to try to live off the grid, even maybe for a summer or something like that, do you think that the mindset is the most important thing to kind of get squared away first before you strike it out on your own? And what kind of, what ways could people kind of prepare for just even giving it a try? Or is it just something you have to go in and not try it? You have to actually just make a commitment.
Oh, I think the most important thing is to know your why. Mm-hmm. We actually have several friends and acquaintances who have launched similar enterprises or have tried to make similar degrees of lifestyle change. And what's interesting to observe is the level of flexibility that comes with knowing your purpose. If you know what you're trying to accomplish and you know why you're trying to accomplish it, then when you get curveballs, you can respond, you can shift, you can make it make sense somehow. If you aren't clear on your why, you get upset pretty quickly and end up with a feeling of impossibility or scarcity or failure.
Mm. Yeah. And do different fears crop up as you're trying to make it on your own, you're trying to homestead, fears come up that you weren't anticipating?
Oh, yeah. So our first winter, we had a bear who came very close and hung out with us for quite some time.
Thanks.
In retrospect, that was simply a mistake. we had provided food for that bear, and I hadn't really realized that. And we haven't, it's very possible that a bear has lumbered through our property in between then and now, but we no longer have the conditions that are appealing to a bear to make him want to hang out and terrify us or terrorize us. So that was a real steep learning curve. And to be honest, Lisa, we almost quit after our first year because we lost track of our why. And it's hard to articulate exactly what all went wrong. Kind of everything went wrong. Everything was too hard, and there also were some personal relationships in the area that were challenging. And we thought, okay, so maybe this isn't worth it after all. It just didn't look the way that we had hoped that it would look. So then I ended up going back to the essentially suburban life just for a couple of months. I went with my husband when he went to work out of town, and I was able to draw a really clear comparison between, you know, these are the difficulties of life off the grid, and these are the difficulties of just life. And I was able to realize that challenges are pervasive no matter what choices you're making. And I really did believe in the lifestyle choices that we had made. And I wanted to redouble my efforts and find a way to make it work.
Now, I saw that I read the post about being a prepper, and I'm kind of interested in if you could talk a little bit about that. Have you gotten, I mean, maybe there's always going to be haters out there who will, you know, not agree or, you know, give us a hard time with whatever it is that we're pursuing. But you were trying to talk about the difference between what you're doing and prepping and living sustainably, and is not the same thing as like prepping for the apocalypse. You were saying is more like trying to avoid the apocalypse or something like that. But maybe you can explain a little better than me.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends who would identify as preppers, and here's the thing that I appreciate about my prepper friends, and the thing that I share with my prepper friends. I am also conscious that catastrophe is. I am aware that legitimate, real deal catastrophe is right around the corner in a number of different directions. As a community, as a people, we're not addressing climate change. Climate change will transform weather patterns and ecosystems within our lifetimes. And I think that my prepper friends and I have in common the willingness to see that, willingness to address those kind of large-scale potential crises. But my agenda is to avert them. My agenda is to make radical change now and encourage radical lifestyle change now. I'm not interested in preparing for a disaster without doing everything I can to first prevent it.
Yeah. Well, so some of the ways that you do that in tangible, concrete ways, what would you say is your part that you play?
Right. So you've heard a lot about carbon footprint. We're conscious of our addiction to fossil fuels, and we make decisions. We make day-to-day decisions in order to minimize our dependency on fossil fuels. That's what the solar power is about. That's why I concentrate my life at home rather than driving to go and get things. Why I try and work with what's here rather than traveling to get an item from the store in town, for example. I also am trying to raise my own food. We garden and we raise animals, and we are working to create systems by which to feed ourselves and potentially our neighbors as well, without transportation costs and fossil fuel dependency.
You know, this is a different, a person who's doing something entirely different than you, but there's some real crossover. I wound up interviewing in I believe it was June, Shane Claiborne, and he was, you know, he lives in inner city Philly in an urban environment, but they put in a lot of gardening, gardens, community gardens and things like that. And what he was talking about, I'm wondering if you see the same sort of thing. And he was talking about our our real desire for community, but also our interdependence that we can kind of lose track of in suburbia or in other environments where we're very autonomous and we can satisfy all of our needs and things like that. I'm imagining that you do rely on your neighbors for things, but what sort of sense of community do you have out where you are? Because I don't even think we even mentioned where you are exactly, but you are in Montana, right?
No, I'm in Idaho.
Oh, you're in Idaho. I'm going to have to edit that out. I don't know why I thought Montana. Idaho, okay.
Yeah, I think the concept of interdependence, the concept of interdependence is more key than many people really imagine. And for me, that's a broad concept, which encompasses my interdependence with the natural world, mm-hmm. as well as with other human beings. The key shift that I need to make in my brain in terms of my personal psychology is actually from a concept of self-sufficiency towards an awareness of interdependence and responsibility. Mm. One of the things that we did first on our property is cut down 23 trees. We cut down 23 of the tall, beautiful Douglas fir trees, which now have made the beams of our house frame, mm-hmm. our permanent off-grid cabin that we are in the process of building. Mm-hmm. I watched those trees come down and we dragged the logs and the limbs across the ground, and we watched the gashes that it really carves out. And I thought, I want to live in a way where I see my footprints, where I see the consequences of my action, rather than saying, oh, I want a new house. Let me go and move into a house and have no idea what it looked like when those trees came down, or what it felt like to that ecosystem when those logs were moved. So I understand that sense of community or interdependence very much with the natural world as well as with human beings.
Yeah,
but to answer, sorry, do you want to cut in there?
No, go right ahead.
So, but to answer your question, we have lately had tremendous success with community, with our near neighbors. We raised our house frame with people who live here, people who are willing to just share their time and skills in return for pizza and the satisfaction of having done the work. I have a friend that I can with. I have a friend who's going to teach us how to hunt. Mm. There are people who want to barter skills without having to engage the consumer economic system. Mm-hmm. And we're finding that incredibly life-giving and literally supportive. Mm,
absolutely, yeah. And I know your husband seems very handy and has a job that brings in income because he's good in construction. But what were some of the skills that you didn't have?
Well, we're not good with electrics. Mm. So it took us a while to figure out our solar power. Mm-hmm. And I've had to learn about gardening and animal husbandry. I had some experience with it from my childhood, mm-hmm. but not as an adult. There's a steep learning curve there, mm-hmm. learning how to take care of creatures and plants. Let me see. I don't know what else. Oh, I had to learn how to cook in a wood-burning stove.
Yeah, I was just about to ask that. Yeah.
That was a steep curve for me. I'm not a great cook anyway, although I do cook and I do enjoy cooking. It's not something that comes easily to me. So making the transition to cooking in a wood-burning stove was exceptionally difficult for me.
So you have to load it up with wood and light it up, right, and then cook on the top of it? Or is it that kind?
Yeah, exactly. So I have a cook stove top and I also have an oven. Mm. And I've learned how to build the fire. It's not really about the stove. It's about the fire. Mm. So what kind of a fire you make will affect how your food cooks.
Mm. Yeah, right. How fast or, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I learned about fuel and I learned about air and I learned about, you know, the timing of a fire, the life cycle of a fire. Mm. And now I bake my homemade bread, you know, every other day in the wood stove, and it works fine.
Oh, that's great. And then what do you do to keep warm in the wintertime?
We also have a wood stove indoors. Mm. So we're actually working on making the system more efficient with a rocket stove. But right now we have a traditional pot-bellied stove, and a lot of wood is offcuts from our timber that we cut for our house. Mm-hmm. So we haven't had to cut wood just for that purpose yet. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to make our heating very efficient mm-hmm. before we have to do that.
Right. And do you think you would raise any kind of like fast growing trees for something like that? Or how do you see that? How do you imagine that things are sustainable, like maybe 5 years or 10 years down the road?
I think it's absolutely possible for us to be sustainable regarding our wood that we use for heat. Mm-hmm. We have several acres mm-hmm. and it is possible to maintain your trees, especially if you have a rocket stove, which burns at a very high temperature and minimizes waste. Mm. It's the challenge that we have is being both wood self-sufficient and heat self-sufficient on the acreage that we have. Mm. The challenge is to be heat self-sufficient and food self-sufficient on the acreage mm-hmm. that we have. Mm-hmm. I don't expect that we'll ever make it to complete food self-sufficiency, mm-hmm. but I think that's actually a good thing. I would be a little frightened if we were able to isolate ourselves to that extent. I hope that we continue to engage in barter and trade mm-hmm. forever mm-hmm. in order to sustain community and community connections.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where you want to still stay – I mean, even just because it gives you your humanity back to be interacting with people that outside your family and helping each other out mutually beneficially. It seems like that's something that, you know, I agree with you. That's something that you should always include in your lifestyle and in your kind of ways of being with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've always wanted that. Mm-hmm. We've always had some suspicion of the phrase self-sufficiency. It usually lets people know what the nitty gritty hands on details of our life look like mm-hmm. if we talk about self-sufficiency. But once we get into a conversation about philosophy, I need to steer clear of that word because, mm-hmm. or that phrase, because what I'm really interested in is integrated community and compassion-based lifestyle as opposed to scarcity-based lifestyle.
Kind of curious as to what you've learned about your own character through the struggle of trying to create a homestead and a lifestyle like that.
Sure. Well, one thing that I love to share is that I've learned to validate my own desire for independence. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite moments occurred towards the end of our first winter when my husband was away for almost an entire month during a time that I was still carrying water. Mm. So I had to bring water down about 200 yards from the spring to cook or bathe or drink mm. or give to the animals. And one day the spring was frozen. Mm. The pump was frozen. So I was afraid that I wasn't going to be able to get the water. And I kind of sat there and thought, wow, for a good 12, 13 years, whenever something like this happens, I ask my husband to fix it. Mm. And here I am, you know, mm. literally in the woods. At that point, I didn't have any communication, you mm. know, no internet or phone. And here I am. Yeah. What am I going to do? And I actually loved that experience because I was able to solve the problem and I felt 10 feet tall.
You know? How'd you solve it?
Well, I used water on a rag mm-hmm. to basically melt the outside mm-hmm. surface. Mm-hmm. And then it was just a matter of patience and kind of working at it and not pushing it too hard so that it would break. Mm. But I did feel good about that. And I think that's what we're all hoping for when what we capture in the Laura Ingalls Wilder books right. and we love to watch on TV is that feeling of, I could do something that I didn't realize I could do. Mm. That's a very hopeful aspect of this whole off-grid concept.
Mm. Yeah, and it's not to overquote Brené Brown, but she talks about hope as a function of struggle. And that's just a fascinating concept, especially to me as a parent. I mean, I hadn't thought of it quite like that, that I'm not trying to put obstacles in my way purposefully to make my children struggle, but that if they should struggle, and they will, to not have to run to feel like I have to run to fix it, to let them work through it and just, you know, stand nearby, be supportive, but also let them feel the feeling of struggle so that they can feel the feeling of hope.
Absolutely. Mm. I mean, I can think of a dozen different experiences, including the wood stove, mm. that have given me that feeling in relation to our chosen lifestyle. Mm. And it's been validating to me to think of my desire for independence as a healthy thing, as a woman who has, over various times in my life, been identified as too loud or too focused on leadership or too ambitious, to be in an environment where the stronger I am, the better. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, it does my heart good.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's gratifying to know that those gifts that you have are being put to such good use too. And your kids get to see, you know, this is how you can make a life for yourself and come into your own. I'm kind of curious as to how your kids, they would probably remember a couple of them anyway, not living in the way you do now. And what has been their reaction to it? And do they wind up having to help a lot to make things work?
It's really hard to tell mm-hmm. how they feel about the lifestyle because they don't have very much to compare it to. Mm-hmm. I see them thriving in their ability to play outdoors and self-identify their interests and passions. They don't worry very much about that we don't have light at night or the bathroom isn't inside. They don't really think about those things. Mm-hmm. They don't come up in conversation. Mm-hmm. So it will be interesting to see how, as they mature, how they begin to experience themselves as other to mainstream society. I think that can be a very mm-hmm. problematic and challenging thing for teenagers and for adolescents. Mm-hmm. And we'll want to manage that. But at this point, there's nothing abnormal about the way they're growing up to them.
Right.
It just feels like normal.
Right. And do they get a chance to go to like relatives' homes and things like that where they see that some people go to the bathroom indoors and things like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, even our near neighbors, mm-hmm. most of them are living a little bit less primitively than we are. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually a helpful thing for them because they learn to navigate those differences with grace mm-hmm. rather than having an assumption that if someone doesn't have an indoor bathroom, they're hicks or there's something wrong with them. They really understand that people make different choices and for different reasons. Mm-hmm. That's coming really naturally to them. But again, as a teenager, things are different when you start to see how there's a group coalescing around certain values. At that point, we may be observed as outsiders mm-hmm. from that in comparison to that norm.
Right.
So we'll have more to worry about at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think too that what you're doing is really can be very strengthening to your family as a unit and as an identity too. So that it's like, you know, this is how our family does it. It doesn't mean that everybody's family's going to do that, but that there's some, you know, some pride in how your family does things. And this is, you know, a point of something to be proud of and to honor, not just think, well, we're different, you know?
Right. I mean, my kids love to tell people that we live in a roundhouse.
Because
mm-hmm. yeah. who lives in a roundhouse? You know, that's something about us that's very unique and they're proud of it for sure.
And they never have to stand in the corner.
That's right.
that's great. And so what are you working on that's, because I know you do writing and things like that. And what are some of your other passions that when you have the time that you are able to engage in?
You mean passions besides homesteading?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think my day is more full than you might imagine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, people think, how much time do you have?
Right.
So I do have a very robust writing life. Mm. I have a book that will be published by Zondervan in April.
Oh, great.
That is on the subject of spiritual renewal and separation from the internet, actually.
Hmm.
That's called What Falls from the Sky. I also am working on an ebook on wood stove cooking, my hard-earned wood stove cooking skills. And I'm working on another book which will tell the story of a lot of things that we talked about today. It's probably going to be called The Homestead Wife. That's a little further down the road as far as considering publication for that.
Yeah.
And I do all the homestead hobbies, you know. Yeah. I cook and I crochet and I take care of my animals and I garden and I save seeds and
right.
And those are all the and I play a little guitar in the evenings, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
It's a very full life.
Yeah, it sounds like. And I'm kind of curious as to sort of your educational and faith background.
Yeah. So my mother was non-denominational, born-again Christian. But her children mostly went the more secular route. And I identified as atheist from the time that I was a teenager until just a few years ago when I reconverted in the main line and then made it another step into the more non-denominational charismatic background mm-hmm. that I was raised in. Mm. And my education coincides with the secular period. So I have just one degree. I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Theater Arts and a decade of career in theater arts as a director and playwright.
Oh.
And that feels almost like a separate life.
Yeah, sure.
What I'm doing now. As if you had just closed that book and started writing another one. I still have friends from that time, of course, but otherwise it's hard to draw the line.
Well, then it makes me curious to ask, what brought you back around to sort of more familiar spiritual roots?
Right. Well, that is the subject of my book that's coming out. Mm. So I tell the story of my reconversion to Christianity related to slowing down and having time to experience my internal longings.
Mm.
I think my desire for faith and for Christ in particular was never gone, but it was obscured by other interests and also just by a pace of life when I was struggling to find my way in a success-oriented and ambitious life.
Mm.
And I do not have a problem with success or ambition. Believe me, I am not crying out on those things. But for me, it was stepping back from all of that that allowed me to find the deep longing in myself for Jesus and to set my feet back on that road.
Mm-hmm. And did the natural world play a role in that, or was this just kind of an internal journey?
Yeah, those three things are very connected. You said two, but I'll say three.
Mm-hmm.
The desire for justice in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And my sense of relationship to the natural world
mm-hmm.
and my perception of connection and authority of Jesus Christ, that's a triangle for me that emerged together as a package.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. And so then that is detailed in the book. Which one was that? 'Cause
it's called What Falls from the Sky.
Right, okay.
And I hope that it tells the story. It's a very complex story to say that I feel like it was an awakening. So it'll tell the story of awakenings. Whether it really makes any kind of clarity out of my own messy journey is another question. But I do think that people will recognize that capacity for hope and healing in that story.
Mm. Oh, very good. I'm hoping that maybe if it's possible that you could send me some pictures of your homestead and some of your wood stove and some of the things that I could include in the show notes, because I've seen some of the things on your website and around as you've posted them, but it would be fun to have those included in there.
I'd love to send pictures. I think our home is very beautiful, and I love to show it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really neat what you've done. I've been really kind of enjoying when I saw that you were bringing timbers in. I was like, oh, this is where this is like the next step. And I thought that's this is really neat. And I'm, you know, I'm rooting for you. And I think it's really kind of fun to follow along.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we're really hoping to be able to translate what we've learned in these 2 years in the yurt into something that has permanence. Mm-hmm. The concept of sustainability is also a concept of permanence. Mm-hmm. So I hope that this doesn't become just a fling that I talk about at cocktail parties someday.
Oh, yeah. Well, back in the day when we were in the wilderness.
Well, you know, to some extent, that's what happened with the Back to the Land movement of the 70s. Mm. Many of those people went back to the land and then back to the town.
What do you think? Why do you think it fell apart?
Well, it has to do with unreasonable expectations, and it has to do with that desire for self-sufficiency to be an immediate and self-satisfying kind of experience, which it just isn't. Mm. It's just like the rest of life. Mm-hmm. It's so similar to life anywhere else. Mm. It doesn't solve the problems of relationships. It doesn't solve the problems of self-worth. It doesn't solve problems of your ability to engage yourself and your own passions and hopes. Mm. To the extent that going off the grid is an escape, it'll always be a failure.
Oh, yeah, that's such a good point. And I think, too, people can really romanticize doing something that feels meaningful for the right reasons and, you know, for good and noble reasons. It can get romanticized. Like, I know I'm going to feel really fulfilled once I am doing this, not thinking the whole time that, you know, wherever you go, there you are, and you have to deal with all the baggage that you brought in anyway.
That's exactly it, Lisa. Yeah. And that's what Nick and I experienced, you know, after our first year, after that kind of rush of adrenaline and, wow, we built a yurt on bare land and moved into it and survived the winter. Mm-hmm. And then the sunlight starts to come up in the springtime and you say, what next? Mm. You know, how do I recreate that kind of joy or sense of meaning? Mm. There's no more dramatic step that I can take. So you really have to ask yourself, you know, what have I brought with me in terms of interior character that can make this sustainable emotionally as well as practically?
Mm. And it's true. Like once the major adventure is over and you have those quiet moments that your thoughts creep back in of or whatever has, you know, chipped away at your self-worth over the years or whatever it is, it'll still be there until it gets worked through in its own way. And sometimes adventure isn't going to be that, it's not going to be that recipe, really. It's just going to be hard work of, okay, what's actually going on, you know, in me, but between us. And so, you know, as far as your husband's concerned, what are some of the things that do you feel that he had to go through in his part?
Well, he has a lot of conflict between his desire to be the breadwinner and his desire to be full-time on the homestead. Mm-hmm. He would love it if I could bring in enough money to support us entirely. And we do push in that direction, but not to the extent of having me do something other than writing or communications, which is what I'm passionate about. Mm-hmm. So he has had that sense of sinking disappointment more than once where he could see the project that he wanted to do on the homestead. He could envision the work that he could do for his family to support us in tangible terms. And he had to get in his truck and drive away because that's what needed to happen in order to fulfill some basic need or another. Mm-hmm. There's always something that requires money.
Yeah.
And I think it's useful to imagine the utopia beyond money. But it's useful as a contrast. It's useful in terms of imagination. Our real lives continue to involve interaction with the economy as it is. And that means money.
Yeah. And I'm sure that it's hard if he's coming back from a long time away that you were like, well, I couldn't get any water out for a while and that, you know, it would bother him that you would be out on your own struggling without him being able to help.
Absolutely. And there's insecurities that creep up there, Lisa.
Sure.
In terms of our relationship, there have been moments when I think either one of us is legitimately afraid that the other one can't handle it or isn't coming back or doesn't actually like this lifestyle after all. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is, that's a challenge in a marriage. We have to have a lot of communication. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's our rule that we hang out a little bit every single night. It's quite easy to accomplish when you have, when your lights go off at night.
Right.
And during the summertime, we can have internet into the evening because our solar power is most charged in the summertime. Mm-hmm. But in the wintertime, you know, there isn't enough juice for all that. Mm-hmm. So it is both practical and for other reasons essential that we just sit by the fire and connect mm-hmm. every single day mm-hmm. so that those fears and insecurities don't creep in.
Yeah. But when he's gone away for a time, do you also continue to connect or how does it work at that point?
Well, you know, we haven't been because my communication has been intermittent. Mm-hmm. So we actually have been able to go a few weeks almost without speaking to one another. And that's a different mode mm-hmm. that we're in.
Yeah.
You know, it harkens to a previous time.
Right.
And I have to tell you that I actually appreciate the feeling of self-sufficiency. There's that word again. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the feeling of capacity and personal independence that I get when I'm really making my own choices and going through my own day with the kids and I'm able to accomplish what needs to happen. I can start the fires. I can get the water. I can make the bread. Mm. I get the kids to bed when I want to get them to bed. I have lots of time for me to focus on my own reading and writing. Mm-hmm. And that structure makes sense. And then it's also a wonderful thing when he comes home and we go back to working side by side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that it also, it's gratifying to look around and, you know, say, well, we did it. We've struggled through all this and look what we've made together. You know, it is an accomplishment that you might need to go back to when things get, you know, rough or rocky or misunderstandings creep up and say, you know, we've been working together and it's, you know, we've created a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I fall in love with my husband more when I see the things that he puts his passion into in a tangible form, you know, mm-hmm. when I see the things that he makes with his hands and his love that's expressed through that, mm-hmm. it's wonderful. It's very romantic.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. And I think a lot of people will be interested about it. And maybe it might even spark something in them that makes them want to take their life in a direction that would be more sustainable and more friendly to the earth and to others. So I really am appreciative of your time.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Don't forget to join us on blab.im/LisaDelay every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or GMT-4. Or you can catch the replay of the live discussion at sparkmynews.com. Did you know that every episode of Spark My Muse has show notes? You can find show notes at sparkmymuse.com. And in those show notes, you'll find details about the people, books, and resources that were mentioned in the show. And sometimes you'll find photos and embedded videos, too. I hope you'll stop by and check it out.